Today's guest is an inspiring and innovative educator. She has taught and shaped many minds from kindergarten to CEO, but what is truly inspirational is her unrelenting passion for financial literacy. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Holly Knight. Holly, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes. So, you know, you have thrown around this idea of the butterfly effect. Please tell us more.
So the butterfly effect, it was actually discovered by a meteorologist out of Massachusetts. But the proverbial butterfly effect is the one I'm referring to. And so the idea is that a butterfly's wings, the flapping of a butterfly's wings in India, right, would cause just enough of a shift over oceans that 6 weeks later you would feel a hurricane in Idaho, right? So the way I look at this when I'm thinking about financial literacy or financial education, all of the things that we do with our children, even the things that maybe we're not even aware of, have a lasting effect. We just don't know what that's going to look like because there's no good way of kind of predicting what the outcome is going to be, just like the butterfly effect. We don't know that, you know, a butterfly wings is going to cause a hurricane 6 weeks later in a different country. So it's, you know, when I talk to parents, especially about kids and, you know, they're asking me when's the best time to start, you know, talking about money concepts. Honestly, I don't think there's ever an age that's too early. I think we can start this so much earlier than we do. I've taught at every level of education from preschool all the way up through executive ed. And so, you know, we have the capacity as humans to really understand some of these concepts. It has to be age appropriate, obviously. But we do have the capacity to learn it. We're just not, I don't think we're hitting the mark with our school systems and the way it's set up now.
Why do you think we're not quite missing? Why are we missing the mark? Why are we not quite there with the way that education is set up right now?
One of the things is not every state mandates financial education. And by mandating it, it means that they can teach one class. One class could be counted as their financial literacy or financial education piece within those standardized school systems. And that's just not enough. I mean, you think about, like, think about school and getting grades and our report cards and how important that was for us, right? That score was super important, yet it doesn't even come close to the value of a FICO score in the real world.
Right.
Right. But we put so much emphasis on those types of scorings in school systems, and yet financial education is completely forgotten about. And I believe it's a huge reason we're kind of in this non-saving environment that we're in.
Now, you teach currently at the university level. So what types of things are you exploring or have you been doing that are tried and true now in your methods that seem to actually resonate with your students?
That's a great question. So one of the things I love doing, and I change this up, so it's not every year that I do the same thing, but teaching students, and so I deal with 18-year-olds, so these are freshmen coming in.
Okay.
And think about the fact, I mean, these are smart kids. They're coming in with 4.2, 4.3 averages coming into college, right? Because they've already been taking college-level courses. And yet, they don't know how to, you know, do their own laundry yet, or, you know, time management and making sure that they're up on time. And yet, we're expecting them to understand, like, what that little debit card is for, or their credit card that their parents are using. They just don't have a way of kind of seeing what's behind that plastic. So one of the things that we do about investing is a lot of adults don't understand the stock market and what does it mean, or that the bond market is, you know, three times larger than the stock market. People don't really understand those concepts. They hear about it in media, right? Because we're totally bombarded with that all the time, but they don't really understand what it means. So we do an investment game. So this is, you know, each team, put them in teams, and this is a national competition, by the way. So schools from all over the country, possibly all over the world, do the same exact thing. So you're in a competition.
Okay.
And so the students in my class are put into groups, and there's three rules. So the first rule is they have to make three trades, or so three buys or three sells a week. It doesn't matter how much it is, but they have to have some activity. And then they have to explain to me as the, you know, as a teacher in their class, why they made the choices they made, right? And so I'll tell you the story. One of my teams came back and, you know, they did their three trades, but they put like $1 here, $1 here, and then they put $99,000 into one stock. And I was like, oh boy. All right, tell me why you did this. And it was really interesting to me because this was the first time I'd really heard this concept of, you know, where they're getting their information from, right? Working in financial services, you know, we do so much research, so much analysis in figuring out what's the best thing for the right people. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things they said is, well, it was Weight Watchers, by the way. So that was the stock that they put their money in.
Interesting.
Yep. And I said, well, why Weight Watchers? And they said, well, we were on Instagram and we heard Oprah Winfrey is going to be the spokesperson for Weight Watchers. So we're going to put all of our money into that because we think it's going to skyrocket. And I was like, woo-wee, all right. So sure enough, she announced, I think it was maybe a week, 2 weeks later, that she was going to be the new spokesperson, and the stock went through the roof. I think it quadrupled. That team, that one team within the classroom, was number one in the country for 1 week.
Oh.
Right? So we got back the next week and I'm like, great job, you guys. You did a great job. Now what? And they're like, oh, we're going to write it out. I'm like, are you sure you want to do that? And they're like, yep. I'm like, I wouldn't do that with real money, but okay. And then sure enough, they lost it all. Right? So the lesson there, it's fake money. So it's not actual money out of their pockets, but you know, they get in this euphoric high of being able to, you know, hit those numbers. And they're like, we'll just keep writing it out. And I'm like, well, that's not smart investing, right? So there's gambling, and that's what I call Vegas money. And then there's smart investing and smart money for longer term goals. So teaching them those types of concepts, I think, is really important. And we can do that in a much younger age level. Because quite frankly, I mean, I work in financial education now and I'm working with adults. So by the time I'm sitting down and doing consultations with folks, they've already made a lot of those kind of errors, I would say, in their mm-hmm. financial life up to that point. And it's never too late. It's never too late. But wouldn't it be great if we could start tackling these issues when they're in preschool? Start teaching them the concepts of money, what the difference between needs and wants. One of the other things I did with my students was, you know, kind of teaching this whole idea of delayed gratification. It's something we are not wired as humans. We are not wired for this, especially when we're younger. So there's an experiment called the marshmallow effect. Have you heard of this?
No, tell me.
So, well, this was done in the 1970s. So they took kids into a room and they had cameras on them.
Oh. You know, it's this. Yes. Okay, keep going.
Right?
Keep
so
going.
The marshmallows, yes. They put the marshmallow out and they said, okay, if you can wait 15 minutes, we're going to give you two marshmallows. And then they leave and then they watch the child to see what their reaction is. And in every case, the child's looking at it, you know, they're licking the marshmallow, they're like trying everything they can, and they always end up eating the marshmallow because that delayed gratification, they just don't know how to do that yet. So, you know, I think it's an interesting concept, and I've done the same kind of experiments with my own kids about delayed gratification and just, you know, understanding the value of money. And when it's somebody else's money, when it's your parents' money or your grandparents' money or whoever else's money, it's a lot easier to spend it. But when it's yours, it's a completely different concept.
So true. And I think that it is an amazing idea, like what you're saying, to teach these sooner so that they can have their, you know, fall on their face moments and have their losses early and then learn from them before they're actually playing with real money. But how would you keep them engaged? Is what that, you know, that's kind of a curious thing. But I want to know, why has financial literacy been something that you've been so pulled towards? Where did that come from?
I've done a lot of different things in my lifetime. So I have my bachelor's is in economics, my master's is in education, and these are my two biggest passions. So this is kind of like the perfect career choice for me. And so one night I was having dinner with one of my mentors at UNH, and Dr. Hasse, who just retired. And he's a pretty quiet guy, and I was talking. I talk a lot with my hands, and you know, I was getting very excited talking to him about this project I was working on. And he goes, Holly, why do you do what you do? I'm like, what do you mean, why do I do what I do? He goes, what's your why? Like, what makes you do this? And I'm like, because I want to help people. Isn't that why we all do what we do? He goes, yeah. You could help people doing a lot of different things. Why this in particular? And I really had to, you know, stop and think about it. And then, you know, it kind of dawned on me that this career chose me. So when I was 15, I was emancipated. I was homeless. I was living out of my car. I put myself through college bartending 3 jobs, right? And I landed on my feet. I did okay. But nobody was talking to me about the ramifications of that little plastic card and what it meant if you did not pay that, you know, that balance every month. And I'm a smart woman. I'm a well-educated woman, but nobody had talked to me about personal finance, economics, statistics, all of those types of concepts, yes. But there's a shame around that, right? There's a shame and there's a guilt, and we're not transparent with it, with each other, which I think kind of just exasperates this issue. So one of the things I started doing, and I didn't start doing this in the beginning, because it's very vulnerable. It's vulnerable to talk about your money story.
Oh, for sure.
And it doesn't matter who you are or what level you're at in your careers or in your life. And I remember the first time I had that conversation, because I would do these education, these financial education courses, and people would look at me like, yeah, you seem like you're a nice person. You dress the part, you sound the part, but you don't get me. You have no idea the struggles that I go through and that I'm living paycheck to paycheck or what bill I'm going to pay this month. And so Dr. Hasse said, you know, I think you should start every education session with that. And I was like, no, not for me. That's for everyone else. That's not for me. But I remember the first time I did it, I was shaking, and you know, I told my story, and I tell my story in 40 seconds or less, because it's not really about me, it's about being vulnerable. And as soon as I do, people lean in. Suddenly, they want to talk about it. And even when I do those consultations with people, I hear a lot, all the time, I'm so sorry, I should know this, I'm so dumb, there's so much shame around it.
So much negative language.
Yeah, the narrative that we tell ourselves. And so I'm very quick about, and this is especially true with women. I would say, listen, it's not my job to judge you. That's not why we're here today. And to be quite frank, like, it doesn't matter what happened. For me, it doesn't matter. All I want you to know is why you do what you do, why you made the choices that you made, you know, throughout your working life. And then if you need to put up bumpers for yourself. But it's okay. Like, because I had credit card debt, I know that that was a weakness for me. So even today, I do this for a living. I talk to people every day, but we are who we are. And that is established pretty early on by the time we're around 5, 6, 7. Our interaction, our engagement with money is really based on what's around us at 5, 6, and 7, and it's pretty well established. So knowing this about myself, I put up those bumpers. So I know if I want something, I put a limit on it, and if I have to wait 24 hours. If I still want it the next day, then I'll buy it. But if I don't, you know, it's usually just takes a little bit of time for me to realize, like, I don't really need that. I don't really want that. But it's that immediate, instant gratification that we are just not wired to handle without a lot of practice.
Yeah, and I hear you putting up these guardrails, and you work in wealth management. And so, first of all, I have to take a step back. It's a fascinating story about who you are as a person, that you can go from being completely on your own at 15, homeless, and now educating the world on what it means to have money working in your favor instead of the compounding interest working against you. Now, so from your perspective, what do you think systemically may need to change in our systems so that we can set kids up sooner to have that awareness, have the information resource, so that they can make the decisions and learn themselves so that they can set up the appropriate guardrails when the time comes?
Right. It's a big ask, right? I mean, It's a lot. Our school systems, I think, need an overhaul. These are systemic changes or systemic issues that we're talking about. And depending on the communities, marginalized communities, that, you know, those issues are even bigger. So we need to, you know, first of all, incorporate it into our school systems. To me, it just blows my mind that this is not mandated in every single school across America. So it absolutely should happen in the school systems, but you know, it's hard to move a big machine like that, and it takes time. So I think that the other way that we can kind of tackle this is at home, right? So it's with our parents and our families and our communities, and just every opportunity that you can to have a teaching moment. So here's one. So this used to drive me crazy. I have 2 children, and when they were younger, I'd walk into a room and the lights would be on, right? And it used to drive me crazy. I'm like, it's our light bill and rah, rah, rah. And but for them, they're like, whatever, it's just mom, and you know, she did whatever, it's fine. And I said, okay, here's what we're gonna do. So we're gonna baseline what our electric bill is every month. Mm-hmm. Anything that's less than that from here on out, I will split the difference with you.
Ooh.
I'll tell you what, I would walk into rooms and they'd be shutting lights off while I was in the rooms.
I love it.
But they learned, like, oh, I'm actually gonna make a profit by saving energy, right? So,
yes.
So that was one of the ways. So there's lots of little different things that you can do as a family that will stick with kids. And that's the thing, it's gotta be continual. It's not just a one-time stop and be done.
Yeah.
It's a constant work in progress.
That's a good point, because we can't just put kids anyways through a personal finance class and then have them suddenly have all the skills and be equipped with all the techniques and have it stick with them, whether it's relevant at that time of life or not.
Right.
I love the idea of trickle feeding them some ideas for intrinsic motivation, because
yes.
You gave them something to want what you were asking them to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's really fascinating. I know that it's really intimidating for parents who are not in the finance field to draw out ideas to guide their kids on finances. And it's probably pretty daunting knowing that, oh, will my kid at fifth grade surpass my knowledge and I'll have nothing left to give? What insight do you have for them, you know, to encourage the grace, whatever they need to educate their kids at home?
Yeah, so I mean, again, I think it comes back to community and reaching out to community. There's so many resources available to parents. But you know, in fairness, if you were raised in an environment where that wasn't an important aspect of it, then how do you know? We don't know what we don't know.
True.
And you know, that's a big, big deterrent. So if you don't know and you don't have like a financial advisor that you're working with, and a lot of people think they can't afford them, I don't think that's necessarily true. There's lots of resources within communities too. There's lots of programs that, you know, incorporate financial literacy concepts into preschool level, primary grades, and so on and so forth. But, you know, it's just any kind of opportunity like that, I think, again, it's just you're dropping those nuggets all along, and eventually all of it kind of molts together to become their mindset on money and how they're going to manage it. One last thing I would say about that, needs and wants. Mm. Big, big topic. I actually just had this conversation with she'll be 21 in 2 days, and my son and daughter raised in the same house with the same parents. They cannot look at money any differently. Like, it's completely different. And she said, you know, we were having this conversation about needs versus wants, and she wanted something, I forget what it was, but I'm like, Julie, that's not a need, that's a want. And she goes, no, but it's a need for me, because it's gonna help my mental. And I said, okay, but really understanding that if this is your goal, and you're telling me that this is your goal, is you wanna live in your own apartment someday, soon, if you keep making these decisions on these, what I would consider a want, because you don't really need to have your nails done, it might make you feel better, but it's not a necessity. So if this is your goal, you've got to figure out a way to get there. And being able to do that at an early age is really helpful. I also matched any money that they got when they were growing up. They both had their accounts by the time they were 7, 8 years old. They had a debit card with the account. And I remember the bank manager saying, well, do you want me to put draft protection? I'm like, oh, no, no. No draft protection. I want them to understand what it means. If they're not managing their own money, I want them to know what that feels like when they go to use it and they get denied. I think that's an important lesson to learn. But so again, two different kids, my son, so any money that they got, any money that they put into the account, into their accounts, I would match it 50%. So that I've started doing that at the age of 7 and 8. My son, I don't think he has spent a dime since he was born. Like, he still has all of his money. My daughter, it burns a hole in her pocket faster than she can get it. Right? So it's, you know, I don't think there's one right answer or one right way to do it, because we're human and there's just so many variables that kind of contribute to what make us us. But the more you can drip on them, the more, you know, just any opportunity you can to talk about it. I also talked to them about money. They knew early on how much money I made. They knew how much our bills were. And when I would tell people that, they're like, well, that seems like that's a lot. Like, why would you tell your kids that? And I said, well, my money is spent on them. Shouldn't they be part of that process? Shouldn't they understand that there's a finite amount and that, you know, if this is what they want, then we have to figure out how that's going to work. Same thing with school education. When you're talking to your kids about colleges when they're in high school, they just don't have that concept unless we sit down and get brutally honest with them about it. We're not teaching them the right skills for adulthood if we're not having those conversations much earlier in life.
And I think it's fascinating to see that the honesty that you bring to the money conversation at home, because that does make all the difference. There's a lot of fear and shame around money conversations or even sharing your income, but you've really normalized it. And I think you've offered us a lot of grace, knowing that we, just as parents, we can do the best that we can, and what the kids end up doing with it is up to them. But I'm encouraged.
Good.
And I really appreciate your insight and perspective. So thank you so much for bringing this to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Me too.